Game On on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green. It's Friday the 16th of October and this is Game On.
Coming up today, the Gaelic players have their say as the Allianz League returns. We'll get the thoughts of Kildare icon Johnny Doyle.
And they're starting to find their men with that little bit more ease.
Johnny Doyle would like to finish here with a score. What a kick! Marvellous score, a fourth point for Johnny Doyle.
David Connolly and Alan Collier are with us ahead of a huge Premier League weekend. Can Everton make more memories like this in the Merseyside Derby?
And the Everton recovery continues apace as they add to the pain of Liverpool. Roy Hodgson in his first derby in charge and the first game in front of the new owners. Disappointed, falling to the neighbours. And the new owners may have smiles on their faces, but beneath that they will have seen that turning Liverpool around for the men from Boston will be no tea party.
You hope not, Marie. Plus, we've BJ Botha on South African rugby's exit from the championship and Racing 92 escape ahead of the Champion Cup final.
Game on 2FM.
I pressed the wrong clip there. I was supposed to play Mike Prendergast. Sure, we'll give it a lash.
Give Paris has been quite bad circulating, so the club had decided and the president decided to put us into a bubble, so we can now to Corsica to prepare for the week before we fly out on Friday to Bristol.
Game on 2FM.
We get into that with BJ later on, but
we're back on track now.
What a bubble to be in, Corsica.
I know, it's living nice. The dream really, as bubbles go. I mean, I've heard of some pretty grim bubbles, but yeah. That's nice.
But it just shows, like, they have the money and they're able to do it. Just whip, I think it was something like 35 guys away there and just make sure they were secure. They haven't played a match since the Saracens game, so... just creating an environment where they're all safe.
You'd want to really like your teammates, wouldn't you?
Do you know what? It's funny just listening to a few of them, and there's the opposite. Some of the young fellas are really missing Paris and hanging around with their friends and going, you know, having coffees. And the lads with wives and kids are there 2 weeks of unbroken sleep. It's heaven. So we'll go through all the rugby with BJ later. We'd love to hear from you, 51552, or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Now, usually on a Friday, we're looking ahead to our whatever we're looking forward to at the weekend, but it does feel a little bit shaky. Although, look, we know professional sport is definitely going to go ahead. There's been so much conversations about whether the GAA should or should not fire ahead and what Level 5 will mean for it. But we don't have any definitive answers, but we're going to preview the game a little bit later with Johnny Doyle. But before that, we're going to hear from Damien Lawler, because Damien, you've been following this story, evolving story. I don't know how you're keeping up with the news cycle very closely. And look, the latest development was that a GPA survey was done. They got to all their players, or they issued the survey to all their players to see if they were comfortable moving ahead with the championship. They asked them a couple of questions and we're still waiting for the results. But look, there's been plenty of speculation about what could come out of it and there was a lot of predictions. Are you any clearer, Damien, of what potentially is going to come out of this survey?
Yeah, Maria, to be honest with you, I thought we'd have word by now. And I think that what's going to come out will be probably be a fairly straightforward. A certain amount of people will want to play and a chunk won't. There was hope, certainly, that there would be a huge number of players who were willing to go ahead. But one of the questions the GPA asked as well then would be, are there any improvements to your setup or camp that were needed? And if so, what were they? So I would imagine that will come into the discussion as well, and that will have a big role to play in things as well. So I think overall you'd be hoping that most of the players, if they deemed it safe and if the public health vice deemed it necessary, that they would go ahead and play the games too. But that there are certain counties out there. I think the GPA has been getting feedback over the last few weeks, maybe counties that haven't been paying particular attention to every aspect of the protocol, and maybe that needs to be improved upon as well. But
Jamie, it's very late in the day though, isn't it? I mean, like, I'm sure the Kerry players are probably on their way to Monaghan now, not that that's one of the counties, but you know what I mean, like the preparations are well underway. The games are going to take place tomorrow and Sunday, so by now you would think and hope that they do have the right protocols in place, because John Heslin made the point, and we spoke about it yesterday, that has anybody thought about the safety of players, and you know, and hearing things like that some setups might not be 100% safe, it's really worrying.
Well, Marie, I think any GAA player out there just wants to know what's going on. And I think the GAA had the meeting with the county chairpersons last weekend. They communicated that everything was going ahead as planned. Then, with the numbers rising high over the last few days, and certain players and certain officials and figures speaking out, it brought a huge degree of uncertainty back into the whole thing. And if you throw in the massive case numbers that the country's seen in the last few days as well, that hasn't helped either. There's continuing speculation then that we're either going to level 4 or level 5. So again, you put in all these factors and players just want certainty. But I think with all this going on, the GAA are still abiding by the public health advice, and the last kind of sign off they had was that it was going ahead under level 4. And I think this survey is late in the day, there's no doubt about that, and the GAA have come, or the GPA has come in for criticism over that, but they will respond by saying that they couldn't hold a survey until they saw what the latest updated information was and what the guidelines were. So it's certainly lots to talk about anyway, because the governing body of the GPA has been discussing the findings this afternoon and we still have not heard yet.
And I think Leo Varadkar's comments as well have kind of added fuel to it, because he hasn't been quite definitive on what it means, what level 5 means for the GAA. And yes, even as early as today, he said, look, it's possible for sport to go ahead on level 5, but only possible if it's done very safely and involves being able to bubble and cocoon teams and players. That's easier for professional sports than amateur sports like the GAA, but ultimately, I think it'll be their decision. So he's very much putting it back on them.
Yeah, and yesterday, though, on yesterday's show, like, I mean, Antonis, they came out with the remarks that if there was a level 5, it probably wouldn't go ahead. And that seemed to be his understanding of that. So that's a different opinion than a day later. I think, I mean, the GAA are certainly going to be led by the government and the public health advice. That has never changed from day one. So there's somebody somewhere is going to have to make a call.
Mm-hmm. Well, we seem to have lost Damien, but we do have Johnny Doyle, Kildare footballer, on the line. Johnny, look, it is a tough conversation to have, because we know there's no right and wrong answer. And, you know, players are going to feel one way and public are going to feel another. And, you know, GAA fans are going to want it to go ahead. But the bottom line is that it has to be able to go ahead safely. Where do you sit on all of this?
Oh, Marie, I'm just very confused. the more I listen
join
and the more
club.
I take it on, I'm nearly more confused. But I think Damien is right. At the end of the day, naked, you know, once was the GAA and the IRFU and the FAI, or even though you have amateurs in the GAA, once the protocols are in place and once county boards abide by them, whatever they are. Now, I was sort of early on the fact that the GAA was in this elite bracket. I was of the assumption, and it was only an assumption, whether I picked it up wrong, that we're going to get regular testing within counties, whether that be every fortnight or once a week, that county players were going to be tested and they were going. Because, you know, when you're asymptomatic, you or me could be carrying, and we don't know, and we could be spreading it through a football team or a hurling team. So I think that's a big thing, that we have to make sure that there is regular testing. Not a case of when we think there's a problem, that an ongoing basis, that, you know, we know that our panel is COVID-free. I think that's the big part of it. And, like, you can argue all in, if we shut down all sport in the morning, you know, you'll have half the country saying that's the right thing to do, and you'll have the other half saying, what are they doing? You know, so it's very, very difficult. I think on a personal level, you know, everybody is, you know, you talk to people, as a person today, they're very, very nervous of it, they won't leave the house, and then maybe someone else says, look, I'm learning to live with it and have a different approach. And I think if a county player, albeit it can be difficult because you feel you have, when you're in that, and I suppose it's a buzzword at the moment, that bubble of inter-county football or hurling, you know, the people that are in the dressing room beside you or on the field beside you, all your actions are geared around those as well. So the easy thing to do is to say you're not happy to walk away, but that's difficult because players feel they have a responsibility to their teammates, they have a responsibility for their club and their family, and representing the county is a massive thing to these players. And it's very, very difficult, even though you might be feeling uncertain about it, it's very difficult to walk away. And it will be interesting to see what the GPA come back with and find. But I think if any player is in that position, that they're unsure, or they have a parent at home that they're worried about, or, you know, because it is a nervous time for everybody, no matter how, you know, what your approach is, every day seems to be, the cases are rising. So I definitely think a player that's in that position that feels, you know what, I'm anxious or nervous about this, you know, the brave thing to do is to step away, but you might need to do that if you're in that position. So I think it's an individual basis. There's not one size fits all. And I think if NPHET are happy for the GAA to continue once the protocols are in place and there's no shortcut taken, I think we should go ahead. But that's only a personal opinion.
Damien, just on Johnny's point there, do you think the GPA a little bit have put it to their members, and that's a little bit unfair? Should they be standing up there as the body and putting it out of the players' hands? You know, we know we don't have the results of it yet, but should the GPA group stand up more for the players and like Johnny's there, nearly protect them?
I suppose there's so many members, Donegates, and so many different circumstances. And intercounty membership, as Johnny would know well, is changing. You might have a turnover of 10 or 12 on the intercounty squad every single year, that it's maybe hard to speak as one body, because some guys are down maybe the very, very low tiers, and others at the elite bracket, and they would have very little in common, even though they are intercounty players. At this stage, I mean, you couldn't say fairer than a canvas of players' opinions. It's very late in the day now, supposed to be getting the findings back, and that's maybe where the frustration is. I think if Johnny was still playing, and I'd say a certain amount of Kildare people wish he still was, I would say the uncertainty of it, you know, in terms of you'd like to get a green light either way, but then Johnny makes the point, every person makes their own point, their own decision too, and in certain counties players have withdrawn from the panel at the moment and they feel that maybe this year's championship is not for them. So I think it's been messy all along, and we're on the eve of the Allianz League's resuming here now, and I think that we've been hoping for more clarification. I suppose on one level everything is going ahead as planned. It's just on another level you've got all this uncertainty, all this debate, all this fear, all these scenarios, the what ifs, and I suppose the fact that the survey was indicated earlier in the week it was coming out, people were kind of hinging a lot onto that, and it's Friday evening and we still don't know about that yet.
Sean Kavanagh was speaking at the RTEJ launch, Johnny, and he said that if he was a county player going into a game and he started to have symptoms, and they could be COVID-type symptoms, that he knows in his head that because he was one of those guys who wanted to get on with and not diminish his chances or the team's chances, that he would be feeling that, look, maybe I need to conceal this. So there is a lot of responsibility on players. How would you feel if you were in that situation?
Well, obviously, look, it's a different one when, you know, you can call out your day. When you're not involved, you might have one opinion. But certainly, if I was feeling and coming up to Kildare playing at the weekend in a league game, I would be very quick to get tested. If it was coming up to a Leinster final or an All-Ireland final, people might laugh because I know it never closed when All-Ireland final, but you would have a different approach. And even with county finals, you know, you'd hear different stories around the country. When you're there and you have to invest in so much in it,
you have a record of never missing a championship game as well.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But you know, it would be depending on the circumstances. Depending on, like, if it was Kildare in an All Ireland final, and I was feeling I had a bit of a dry cough, I'd be saying, I'll be all right. I'll shake it off.
Yeah,
that's probably been very, very honest about it, and that's not maybe taking responsibility. But when you're in that situation, it's very, very difficult on players. And again, would you, if someone shied away from a county because they felt they weren't comfortable, you would say it's a brave decision and more luck to them.
And I guess if there was regular testing, then that would be taken out of their hands.
That's the thing, yeah. And I think that's where the GA have to be. You know, if that is the case, the players have to be tested every week. Well, then there's an onus and responsibility on the GA and the county boards to make sure that that is happening. And if they come and say, well, it doesn't matter, John Dyle, if you want to or don't want to play, you're not clear to play. And everybody's on the same pay, and you're just unlucky that you picked it up. I think that's the key for me.
Damien, Derek Lynch, the journalist with the Clare Champion, has just tweeted the match programme for the Clare Fermanagh game with 18 players listed in the Fermanagh squad to face Clare on Sunday. And look, I don't think you can take away from the fact that that's not the situation that the GA would want to be in ahead of the resumption of the league.
No, absolutely not. And it's a scenario, Marie, whereby they wouldn't have wanted that. They tried everything, I suppose, to try and get around this, like in terms of isolation and trying to get the game postponed as quickly as possible. But actually, we just got kind of some word from that survey now, Marie, and it's a 52% that are in favour of the championship going ahead. 24% then are in favour of the championship going ahead, provided improvements are made for the protocol. And then 24% are not in favour. So that's kind of the information I have to hand. So that's kind of, I suppose, really, if you think about it, it's almost as expected, like a large chunk want to go ahead and others have reservations as well.
And Damien, what happens now with that information? Is it presented to the GAA and do they consider it a bit like NPHET and the government?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I suppose the statement comes out and I think the GPA has then reflected the views of its association, its members. And I think then...
Because it's not overwhelmingly in one way. Like, you know, it's pretty split if you...
No, and it goes down, I suppose, to the point I was making, and maybe Johnny will pick up on this too. Like, you're dealing with players from counties at all tiers, and you don't know what the situation is like in level four for one county compared to others where it's probably impeccable. So I think there is that discrepancy there. But I suppose the canvas, probably the GPA felt they had to go through with this before the championship started, before the season resumed. And I suppose really, if you think about it, though, it's probably an indication of the narrative that's going on in social media and in the media at the moment, that a lot of people are for it and other people want to go against it.
Okay, well, Damien, I know that you have to go. You've other commitments for...
Babysitting.
Yeah, you have to feed the kids. But thanks so much for joining us. We'll let you go now and we'll chat to you later. Look,
thanks,
it's good to get those results from the survey anyway. Johnny, just as Damien was saying there, so 52% are in favour of playing it. I don't have them in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he said 24% then.
Yeah,
or if you, yeah, if there's improvement. So look, it's not. And then another 24-ish are saying that it's they don't want to go and play it. So, you know, it's pretty evenly split there.
Yeah, it is evenly split. And what I do, my concern would be, and just from hearing those figures, is that 24% looking for improvements. Like, this, I don't feel this is a grey area, or should be a grey area. You know, if NPHET, we have to go by NPHET protocols. And if they are, whatever they are, them boxes must be ticked all the time. You know, and for me, it's not a... that's the worry I'd have, is that there's 24% feeling that there needs to be improvements on whether it's that regular testing, whether, you know, is it only that they're tested when somebody has a symptom, then you're looking to close. I feel, for me, it would be that there is regular testing. Like, you know, your squad is in a clean bill of health from week to week. And I think that certainly that would be the area I would be very much focused in on. I would be worried too that maybe, you know, if there is a lot of players out there concerned about their own health issues and the health issues of close family and things like that, there is hard decisions to be made, and they would be really hard. You know, it's okay for us that are not involved in them, you know, but if you're in the middle of that and you're really pushing hard maybe to make a county squad, or you're a young lad coming in mad keen to try push on, and you know, you go into a dressing room, and I'm sure Donegal has experienced this when he started out. You put your head down and you work hard, and you don't get involved in any of that sort of thing. You're just there to try prove yourself every day. So that can be difficult. But certainly the numbers coming back are very much split. And as you point out, it'll be interesting to see what will come of it.
Johnny, we chat so much about everyday life, just that there's no stigmas with certain things. But how important is it for players to feel that they can step away and that's okay? You know, like, because, you know, we've both been in dressing rooms where it's, you know, we have to perform for the team, but someone's saying, look, I have a general concern for my family and my own health. It's not right for me to play.
Yeah, and it is difficult. There's no doubt about it. Particularly, you know, it might be a little bit easier maybe if you're more established, or, you know, everybody's personality is different. You know, you'll have so many different characters in a dressing room. But I can't see, and maybe I'm wrong, I can't see if someone stepped up or said to a manager, look, at it, I have to opt out. You know, that happens every day for loads of different reasons. My work commitments, you know, I don't think my body can take it anymore, and I'm stepping away. And, you know, we celebrate, you know, if it's a long-established player, we celebrate their career. And if it's a young lad maybe that wants to travel, you say fair play to him, at least he's honest and he moves away. And I think that, you know, if you have a manager that makes, or a, you know, a management team that makes you feel that that's the environment we work in, we put nobody under pressure, you're here to work hard, and if you feel that you can't give that commitment for whatever reason, and, you know, obviously the COVID is a big reason, I think that there is an opening there for you to just step away and not face any stigma because you were brave enough or it just didn't suit you. And because Intercounty is full of players, like there's so many great club players didn't make it at Intercounty for a number of reasons, and sometimes they just can't give the commitment that's needed. It's not because they wouldn't make it, but their lifestyle or their work or their family life doesn't allow it, and that's fine. People don't look at them down their nose at them. They do maybe look down their nose at a player that is half in, half out, not sure, missing training, you know. And I would think that the brave thing to do and the thing to do, I don't think there is any stigma involved in saying, you know, at this moment in time, the Intercounty scene just doesn't suit me. I think that's very, very fair.
Well, Johnny, at this moment in time, the Intercounty season is proceeding, so we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and we're going to preview the game. So please stay with us.
With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way. Game on. GAA.
Now, welcome back. It is time to preview the Gaelic football action because it is going to resume tomorrow after quite a lengthy break.
A smile. And
it is brilliant that it is going to come back with such big games as well. There's so many mouthwatering ones, it's even hard to know where to start. But I am going to start with Galway and Mayo, Johnny Doyle, because I think with the addition of Jim McGuinness, seeing him in that little video doing the hand passing drill, it's hard not to get excited about it for many reasons. And I think the main one is that, you know, when Jim McGuinness gets hold of a team and he looks at the players that he has and he designs a system to make them better. So when you look at the way that Galway play and the players that they have, it's exciting to think of what he could get out of them.
Yeah, and I suppose it is. There's definitely, it took a lot of the airwaves in the world of Twitter and stuff like this, that Jim McGuinness was in working with Galway, and obviously the connection that that Paul Joyce and Jim would have had playing in Tralee all those years ago. So obviously they'd be friendly enough. And I suppose the big question is, you know, what role is Jim McGuinness in the team? Will he go and try to change the shape of the team, or what does Paul Joyce want him to do? Certainly, the goal we've seen early in the year, the goal with sitting on top of Division 1, is playing a lovely open brand of football, lovely attractive football, great football to watch. And, you know, would have been a little bit different than the football that Kevin Walsh would have played with Galway. Might be different to Jim McGuinness's approach that we would have seen. Obviously, the first couple of years with Jim McGuinness, and they would have got a lot of men behind the ball, and, you know, wouldn't have got a lot of bouquets thrown at them. But obviously, you know, when the Donegal of the won the All Ireland was a little bit more attack minded. So it'll be interesting to see. It certainly is. There'll be a lot more eyes looking at the Galway and see, can they see a Jim McGuinness stamp on it? Or was it a case of, you know, and I'm not sure, was it a case of, well, sure, look what we're doing, and Jim, would you come down to a session with, which, you know, has happened in the past. So it'll be very interesting to see. And trying to preview it, though, guys, is going to be tough. And no matter what match, you've no form, you don't know what. Obviously, teams weren't training together, but what shape will guys come in? And, you know, some counties were back, you know, Leash and Offaly and ourselves in Kildare got an extra couple of weeks lockdown. That probably didn't help to get some of the work done with the players back on the field. But, you know,
but one thing you do know, Johnny, is that Mayo need to win their next couple of games to stay up in Division 1, and you can imagine that there's nothing Galway would like to do more than to relegate them to Division 2, so there's lots at stake.
Lots at stake, yeah, absolutely, lots at stake. And as you're right, that rivalry of Galway and Mayo, it definitely will come into play. And you know, Mayo will not want to go to Division 2, there's no doubt about that, and they'll be fighting tooth and nail. So it's going to be a really interesting game. Really looking forward to seeing how both teams are stepping up.
Just on it, Johnny, the step up from playing with your club, is it a good thing now? Do you think the players will be, you know, having that run in with their clubs, that they'll be at the level already, or can we expect sloppy performances?
It's a different level with the club, there's no doubt about that. I mean, we would have heard how great it was not to have the pressure of trying to do both. So there's benefits from the club, but you'd also feel now that there's benefit for the county that, you know, there's not club managers maybe ringing to see, can you be down here, just show up on a Saturday to give the boys a bit of a boost, and that club scene is all closed off. So I think that will help players. It's just to focus on one will be good. You'd be hopeful that players, you know, that would have carried good form from their clubs, maybe had got a bit of success with the club, will carry that form in, and maybe, you know, will inter-counties have taken one or two lads that have shown that bit of form, maybe weren't on the panel originally early on in the league, and are showing that form or given an opportunity. So there's loads of that going to be thrown into the mix, which is good. It's talking points for people watching. It could be interesting to see, and you know, building for the championship, because that's going to be coming hard and fast at it as well. So it's definitely a year that things are going to be very different, and you know, if you can get a bit of form early on, could carry you through well into the championship.
Another thing we do know for sure is that Kerry play absolutely savage football in the summer. But we're going into November now in a couple of weeks, and you know, the ground's a bit heavier. Will it be easier to shackle the likes of Clifford in this kind of weather, do you think? They're playing Monaghan in a skiing tomorrow at 2 p.m.
Yeah, if you said anyone else about David Clifford, I'd say, yeah, there's a good chance.
He'd be sending him wellies.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be hard to put the shackles on him. But, yeah, certainly this time of year, look at it. The weather is to be good, I think, tomorrow. You know, the ground is still dry. I was out on the pitch last night, and the pitches are in really good order. So I don't think it'll be a big thing just yet. Obviously, the wetter we go and the closer we get into, or the more we get into the winter, the weather, the wind, the rain, even though the vast majority of county pitches now are in supreme condition all year round, but still it is a leveller, there's no doubt about it. You know, you can be beaten by a high ball dropping into the square and you're in trouble. So certainly it will, I think it'll be a different game as we get into there. As we get into the winter, but I would think tomorrow you're still on the autumn football. The ground is hard, and I think you'll see for a few really good games over the weekend.
And Johnny, I'd say as well, like the counties that are competing for Sam won't like to hear this, but Kerry are the one county as well that play really important club divisional games in October and November, and they're very competitive and they mean a lot to people as well, so they'll be well used to this time of year. Just on Monaghan, look, I know we're kind of talking about whether or not the championships are going to go ahead, or even the games at the weekend are going to go ahead, but by all accounts, all the noise is coming out of Monaghan that they are absolutely mad for this to get going. They've done a huge amount of work with Banty, and they really want to make an assault on the championship, and I imagine that will be starting tomorrow with that league game.
Yeah, and what a start it is as well. You know, if you want to test yourself, no better place to see how you're going against a top team like Kerry coming to your back yard. So it is, and Banty will have them very well organised. You know, you've some really top quality players in that Monaghan team, and you know, Monaghan are a team like that. They'll have no fear of Kerry tomorrow, especially coming up the road, you know, and they'll be. I expect Monaghan to give that a right good go, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Monaghan finished on top. Certainly, they've pushed hard in the last couple of years, and maybe Banty coming back in would just bring a little bit of freshness, maybe, to the panel. And you know, sometimes that does happen. You can capitalise on the work done by Malachy O'Rourke, who would have done phenomenal work there over the last couple of years. And you know, someone fresh coming in might just unearth one or two players. So it'll be very interesting to see. What it's definitely a match Monaghan would be very confident of leaving with 2 points.
And on that, there is potentially a talent unearthed. Andrew Woods apparently is due to get a start in the half forward line and has been absolutely tearing it up in the championship. So we'll be keeping an eye on him. And look, I think, okay, even though Meath are already relegated, I think the Dublin challenge is quite an interesting one, just purely because we're not really sure what Desi Farrell has done with this Dublin team. We haven't seen them. We know he tried a huge amount of players in the opening stages of the league, but you know, we haven't seen them since, and there's been departures since, albeit not starters, Jack McCaffrey aside, but the likes of Dermot Connolly, Darren Daly, O'Gara and Brogan, they're not players that you would put into the starting 15, but still it's hard to know what way he's going to go with them and what progress he's made with them. So it is quite interesting, Johnny.
Yeah, it is, and it can be a difficult job. You're coming in to manage a team that's after winning 5 All-Irelands. I mean, where do you go from there? What's progress for Dublin? You know, but certainly Desi is a very astute manager. He's been involved all the way through with a lot of those players, and he will look to bring in. The one thing he'll have to do is bring in that freshness, and I know that was maybe forced on him, you know, losing like the players you mentioned. But and what people sometimes don't see is trying, they mightn't be starters, but they're standard drivers in the dressing room, and they drive, you know, the Bernard Brogans and these guys, Jack McCaffrey, Dermot Connolly, these guys would drive the rest of them, and they're very, very important to that Dublin setup. And in saying all that, sometimes leaving, when they leave, it creates a void for some other player. And you know, the one thing about bringing in new players is they will bring that energy, will bring that drive for Dublin. But it must be difficult you know, after winning 5 All-Irelands in a row, you know, to try re-energise the team, and after such a long layoff as well. So it'll be very interesting to see what, you know, but this is still Dublin. We're talking about the greatest team that is, you know, or maybe the Kerry lads would argue, but probably the greatest team that ever played the game. So, you know, they're very professional in what they do. They're very well set up, and there's some really top quality players involved in that game. So they'll be trying to keep pushing the board out, and I think they'd be, even though Meath will be looking to build for championship now, the league is gone for them, and they'll be looking to make a little bit of progress tomorrow night, but you think Dublin would still have too much for them.
Johnny, just the rivalry there, they might be relegated, Meath, but it's still Dublin, and, you know, 5 in a row, as he said, it should be an unbelievable match for just that, you know, the tribalness of it all, and the going up against your biggest rivals.
That's always there, and so, you know, whether it's Galway and Mayo or Cork and Kerry, that definitely adds to it. But yet the quality, I mean, we've seen so often in the past going into big Leinster, you know, Leinster to semi-finals or finals, and you'd be thinking Dublin Mead and the whole tradition around it, and Mead and Dublin just blow Mead away. So it stands for a bit, don't I? Maybe not as much when you have the quality of Dublin. They seem to be able to just get over all that and knock it into those, you know, those dogfights. They're able to just play their game. They can up the pace or slow the game down, and they have the quality footballers to do that. And they seem to be just, you know, when they're in top flight, they just play the game at the way they want it and force teams to abandon their game plan to try to come and, you know, take on Dublin. And when you go to take Dublin on, as we've seen so often in the last number of years, they just blitz you out of the water. So it's very difficult to play at that Dublin team.
It'll be interesting as well, Johnny, to see if they go hard at it, because they have these couple of league games, and unless they have Meath again, then they were not going to meet any Division 1 teams again until the All-Ireland semi-final. So they're going to have to get up to speed very, very quickly and try and keep that momentum. Now, Donegal and Tyrone, I think everybody's fascinated by this one as well, because the prediction is, or the expectation is, that it's going to be shadow boxing. If you were in the situation of either of those teams, how would you approach this game, Johnny?
Oh yeah, it is a difficult one. You know, are you using it to maybe blood a couple of players, if there's a couple of players back from injury? Yet you don't want to maybe give away too much, but yet you still want to, you know, when we have a manager saying let's put football out of these guys' heads come championship, it's a tricky one to get a good feel for. But look, I've been involved in a lot of teams, and I've never been in the dressing room where, you know, you say, well, we don't want 2 points here. You know, both teams will go out to win it. Obviously, if they've tried different things, maybe a change in game plan, will they try that, or will they hold a little bit back on what they're working for because championship is around the corner? There may be a bit of that, but I think you'll still see two teams looking, pushing hard to win the game and get points on the board. But, you know, will there be a small bit of a shadow boxing? Maybe so, in regards to their tactics. If they're going to, you know, working towards something for the championship, they might abandon it on the night or something like that. But you still see a good competitive game when these two counties meet. I don't think any of the northern counties, you know, when there's a game to be won, they'll be full throttle to go and win the game.
Okay, Johnny Doyle, thanks for joining us. We had intended to get to Division 2 because there is so much to play for. Nearly all the counties involved have either relegation or promotion worries and hopes, but we don't have time. But Johnny, thanks anyway, and enjoy the games, and let's hope they all go ahead.
Thanks very much, guys.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. An interesting text in. The honest answers from Sean Kavanagh and Johnny Doyle say it all. For Anna having to play with basically no team, basically a split decision from the GPA, risky times. Well, we will find out more over the next few days and even weeks, I'd say, because it is evolving all the time. Now, one thing we do know for sure is that we have Premier League this weekend, and Alan Cawley and David Connolly are on the line to look ahead to it. Alan, I think there's nowhere to start really, bar the Liverpool-Everton game, and I think it's fair to say for the first time in a long time, it's quite hard to call.
Yeah, it is, Marie, to be fair, and that's because of the form of Everton since the start of the season. Obviously, Ancelotti done a bit of shopping in the off-season, and he addressed the problems that he felt he had, obviously, when he came in last season. They didn't finish too great, but he was only assessing the squad. And to be fair to him, the business that he's done, particularly in that midfield area, has transformed the team, really. And they look very, very strong. And obviously, you add in the form of Calvert-Lewin as well, and the confidence that he's gained since the start of the season, and the goals that he scored, and obviously scoring for England as well. And they look a formidable outfit, to be fair, and I'm certainly looking forward to the game, because for far too long now Everton have been in the doldrums, and they're a huge club, Marie, obviously, to have that investment behind them now, and of a top quality manager. And I think they'll give Liverpool a good run for their money in the game at the weekend.
There is a League of Ireland game on tonight as well. Dundalk are playing Bowes. It is half-time and it is nil all there. David, Alan mentioned Calvert-Lewin there, and it is quite an interesting one. Ancelotti seems to be getting the best out of him. Did he always have the potential to be that good?
Yeah, Marie, I mean, it's a good question, because, you know, when you get your centre-forward banging in the goal, everyone looks at a manager as if, you know, he's the reason why. And I think, you know, Donica will say this, Al will say this, you know, and I know a little bit about Calvert-Lewin. He puts an awful lot into his game. You know, he's got his own chef, he's got his own yoga teacher, he's got his own personal coach. You know, he looks at every element of his game. And I think there's no doubt, Ancelotti, you know, the one thing Ancelotti does well, and I've heard this from so many people, he's a player's manager. He'll give him plenty of confidence, and that's key for a centre forward. But look, apart from that, he works really hard at his game, and it's just all coming together for him. And I agree with Al. I think Everton, you know, are going to give Liverpool as good a game as any time. The only issue, I think, is Ben Godfrey going to be chucked in. They're struggling at centre-half. They really are. Holgate's out. Nina's out. Lucadinha might be out. And you think, you know, maybe just a little bit of momentum might have been lost. If they faced Liverpool before the break, then I would have fancied, you know, Everton even more. As it is, I just wonder whether Liverpool had a little bit of time to regroup after that defeat, that heavy defeat, and they might just be a little bit more prepared for them.
Alan, just on that point, you know, before the international break, losing to Aston Villa 7-2, that will be scarring Liverpool and Klopp, and they'll be mad keen to get out there, especially for such a big game.
Yeah, well, I think that result epitomised just the way we're feeling in 2020 in general, don't it? If a football result could sum up the year, that was it, because who would have seen that coming, Aston Villa winning 7-2? I certainly didn't, and I don't think many would have, to be fair to them. And they fully deserved the win on the night. And to be fair, I suppose, to Aston Villa, they have started the season quite well, but nobody would have given them a prayer of maybe beating Liverpool. They probably wouldn't have given them a prayer, but they beat them 7-2. So you're right what you say in terms of Liverpool. Obviously, they're a wounded animal coming into the game, and it could be the best game for them coming straight into a Merseyside derby after such a heavy defeat, because they'll obviously be out to avenge that. I'm sure Klopp, regardless of the performance against Aston Villa and whatever went wrong, I'm sure he's still probably scratching his head, because the fact that they lost 7-2, and when you think everybody was predicting that up to that point, that they can only see one winner in the Premier League, and that the Liverpool were going to run away with it because of the problems Man City were having, and Chelsea had a slow start. It's wide open now off the back of that result, and it gives hope to all the other teams as well. So Everton will fancy their chances, but it could be a good thing for Liverpool that they're coming straight into such a top game and a big game against their most bitter rivals as well.
Some of the issues will still be there though. Okay, Adrian is going to be still in goals because of the Alisson missing, and it seems very clear that, David, that the players around him don't have a huge amount of confidence in him at all. But look, Thiago and Mane will be back from COVID and hopefully very well as well, but you know, you'd still worry about Liverpool getting back up to it when, you know, the issues are still there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if you go back to the Leeds game, you know, and you can look at how Everton, you know, had a similar sort of game plan. You know, Bielsa recognised that they were so high defensively, you know, that early ball over the top and just getting in behind the centre-halves and the full-backs. And look, you know, Gomez struggled. He was taken off. You know, young Curtis Jones came on. Will Matip start? You know, someone's got to be able to deal with Calvert-Lewin, because, you know, brilliant in the air, great in the box, and that high defensive line. I guess, look, if Richarlison's not fit, you just think, you know, maybe, you know, momentum might have gone from, but look, I think they both have issues at centre-half, and I think it's going to be, I think, what is it, 7 of the last 8 at Goodison have been draws, yeah. 3 have been 0-0, but I think with both teams struggling at centre-half, I don't think this is going to be a 0-0.
Okay, well, Alan, moving on to Man City and Arsenal, and I think by the end of the weekend we'll probably know a lot more about where the teams are at, but definitely when you look at that game, you have so many subplots. You've got the Pep versus Arteta, and you've got the Master and the Apprenticeship, and you kind of hope that you're going to get this lovely game of football. What do you think?
I think it'll be a good game, Marie, as well, and sure, what would you expect from any team that Guardiola puts out, the football that they play. But they have problems, they really do, and none more so than obviously the fact that they're going to be missing Kevin De Bruyne for a few weeks, and I'm sure he's not one bit happy about that. I watched the game against England for Belgium, and he was pulling all the strings, and then obviously he got injured as well, and we all know how good he is. And I suppose looking at the start that they've had, he's been the only really senior figure and the talisman that has stood up. Everybody else has probably struggled so far with the start of the season, and obviously they're missing Aguero and Jesus, and they're having to play that false nine or one of the wingers up front, and it's just been problem after problem for them. So they're going into the game low on confidence, whereas you look at the contrast with Arsenal and the start that they've had, and Arteta has done a really, really good job since he's gone in there. And I like the fact that he's put a structure in place that I felt has been missing from Arsenal for a long, long time, in the sense that I always felt they were a bit weak and were lacking discipline in terms of, not just, I don't mean discipline, bad behaviour or anything like that, just the discipline about the team and a shape on them, that they were always loose. But I think he's addressed those problems so far, and I think the signing of Gabriel at the back has been a good signing. He's held on to Aubameyang. As I say, the shape of the team looks really, really good. And I would fancy Arsenal against Man City because of the problems that they're having. And as I say, I will fancy his chances going against Guardiola also.
Okay, David, just before we finish up, there was a bit of breaking news that Manchester United have reportedly triggered a one-year extension in Pogba's contract. I don't think that was the news too many people were expecting from Manchester United.
No, but look, you can tell why. Obviously, it just gives him that extra year, you know, a bit more bargaining power in terms of, you know, when he does move on. But no, it's probably not the headlines at the minute. It's another headline that United probably could do without. It's come at the wrong time.
Absolutely. Alan, as a United fan?
Yeah, well, I was hoping you might bring him up, or when you did talk about Man United, because one of the biggest problems that Solskjaer has is Pogba. And he needs to make a big, tough, hard decision, and it's about time that he made it. Everybody's talking about the problems with De Gea and goal, and obviously he made a mistake for Spain during the week as well, but Pogba has been an absolute disaster, and not just in the last two or three games. He's been a disaster for the last 18 months, Marie, and someone needs to get a grip of him, because what's going to happen is Solskjaer is going to get the bullet and Pogba will still be there. So if I was Solskjaer now, I'd be the one making the big, tough, hard decision. And for me, it's not even a big, tough, hard decision, the way he's been playing and all, and his attitude. And you look at the performance against Spurs, and I know there was plenty more, but giving away the penalty, not tracking Aurier for one of the goals as well. I think Pogba has been an absolute disaster, and if I was Solskjaer, I'd get rid of him as soon as I can.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what Ruby Walsh has to say about this on Monday. Alan and David, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the football at the weekend. There is plenty of it.
With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, over the past couple of weeks, we have been keeping our listeners informed about coming and goings on inter-county panels. There is some news on the Clare football panel. Jamie Malone and Gary Brennan are back, and also Podge Collins has joined the Clare football panel after stepping away from the hurling panel. We discussed that a few weeks ago. Big
cup
news
of tea over the road. Yeah, there's big news as well, Marie. It's a massive weekend. It's a showpiece of European rugby, and we're delighted to be joined by BJ Botha. BJ, how are you?
Good stuff, guys. How's the game, Donners? How's Marie?
Hey.
We're great. BJ, we'll speak about the Exeter and Racing game, and tonight it's Bristol versus Toulon in the Challenge Cup. But first, it'd be wrong as a World Cup winner not to ask you about South Africa withdrawing from the Rugby Championship. So they've obviously cited COVID as a major problem, but player welfare is the big thing here, BJ.
Yeah, of course. Big news. But I don't think the people in South Africa is no surprise. I suppose the big thing there was player management, really, and their welfare regarding how many games they've played. Obviously, we've seen how many games, in-house games, Australia, and obviously New Zealand managed to play. And I think they felt the guys were just not up for it, playing just one or two games, you know, leading up into this. And then the other part of it would be massive, the COVID side, and obviously also the travelling. So in a whole, I think South Africa probably a little bit, probably 3 weeks too early for South Africa. I think if they could have pushed it, maybe Sanzo could have pushed it 3 weeks later, which they couldn't. I think they might have looked at it differently, but I just think in the totality of it all, they made the right call.
BJ, as ex-players, it's good to actually see this, because we hear so much lip service to player welfare, but these players started playing their domestic season on the 10th of October, and they're expected, like you said, to play massive international games on the 31st.
Exactly, and you know, I think the players can just now you know, keep their heads down and concentrate on what's coming. I think that they now believe, I suppose, there's some hopeful plan that they're leading forward. Who knows when they might play Test rugby again? I think there might be a bigger window period now, but hopefully they can just knuckle down and move into the domestic side of things and do what they do best.
Everyone starts thinking straight away, though, could this open the door for them entering the Six Nations? We won't go into it. We haven't enough time, BJ.
We've a lot going on.
Yeah. Exeter versus Racing 92. I don't think I've been as excited for a game. We're going to have a new champion. Squad's named today, Jack Noll back in for the Exeter Chiefs. Simon Zeebo at fullback and Dunica Ryan on the bench. How do you see this going?
No, there's no doubt it's super exciting. And as you say, the new champions, you know, going to be crowned this weekend. I just think both teams just kind of have got such great talent and such depth, you know. And I suppose in one part, Exeter will be the side that really is just that attritional side, you know, that just keeps on hammering at the line. And we've seen them, you know, playing how they're playing, just keep on pressurizing sides to make mistakes. And on the other side of the hand, you know, Racing Metro can put anything on the field and really just have magical touches of Finn Russell at 10, you know, lighting up that really dangerous back line. So, look, I feel from where they are and where they're playing, I feel Racing, you know, might have the edge if Finn Russell and especially the dangerous back can do something special. But I think it's really going to be a close battle. And as we know, with the back three of Jack Noll coming in now and Stuart Hogg in the back three as well from Exeter. So I think they're very closely matched up, you know.
BJ, you're right, there's loads of flair out the back, but when it comes to the Exeter Chief, if you give them entry into your 22, you can almost, you know, head back to the halfway line because they will score from close range.
There's no doubt, you know, they're really well coached in that area and pressurising teams. They're definitely going to come away with points, you know, and I think that position, keeping position and obviously, you know, strangling sides in that 22 is what they do best, and they're forward. The forwards would know what physical, you know, aspect they need to bring to the French side. You know, you need to bring the physical side. Otherwise, you're just not going to get over that mark.
Loads of Irish interest. I'm going to get you to call it, though, BJ. Who do you see winning the Champions Cup final?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very close, Donis, but I think I'm going to go with Racing. Got some, obviously, some three Irish guys and part of the setup there. So, you know, I wish them all the best. And, you know, I would like to see Racing Metro, you know, get over the mark.
Yeah, very true. Okay, it's time for us to bring in Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports. Leon, how are you?
Good evening, Gunners. How are you, pal?
I'm very good. Yourself?
I'm keeping well, yeah. Looking forward to a great weekend of racing.
Exactly. Don't worry, racing. There's plenty of good rugby on as well, Leon.
There is. And look, there's plenty of good football on. There's plenty of good GAA on, Donegal. There's plenty for everyone to watch.
Absolutely. Well, Leon, we have a unique punter tonight. We're going to get BJ Both, a World Cup winner, to be our punter for this evening. BJ, would you explain the charity you're representing today?
Yeah, the charity I'm representing, Donegal, is Epilepsy Ireland, kind of close to my heart. And this week they're celebrating Rose Week, and it's just creating awareness that the really encouraging everyone to take part. The hashtag is RW2020, and literally just about raising awareness and, you know, donations if possible to the charity. They really just create this awareness about the condition that affects up to 40,000 people in Ireland. And during this week, my club side has taken on the plunge as well to complete 40,000 push-ups in aid of this, and obviously set up a page for that. So, a big week for Epilepsy Ireland, and it's going well so far.
A brilliant charity, and brilliant from UL Bowes to do that. Leon, let's hope we can help BJ out here. So I'm going to give you our expert. Jane Mangan has gone for, what is it?
Mischief.
Yeah. The British Championship Stakes. Sorry.
Look, has a fantastic chance. Dunica is a French Derby winner, won the next time out as well, but taking on the current champion in Magical, who is the favourite, but Jane has gone for Mischief. Look, it's 3-1 for Epilepsy Ireland. We're going to double that to make it a 6-1 chance for Jane Thorpe to win tomorrow at Ascot.
Well done, fair play to you, Leon. And then we look at Alan Cawley. He's gone for a double with Chelsea and Newcastle to win.
Yeah, he's gone for Chelsea to win at home, which they should. And I'm surprised with Alan, he's gone for Newcastle to beat his beloved Man United. Maybe he's tipping up Newcastle because he's hoping that something might happen. But look, the double works out at 6-1. I'm going to push that all the way out to 10-1 for Epilepsy Ireland. And the Boyle Sports boost, I'm going to stick with Racing. It's at the 2:40 at Ascot tomorrow. A horse called Thundering Knight trained by Joseph O'Brien, who's having such a tremendous season. Tom Marquand, the young English jockey, will ride this horse tomorrow at Ascot. It's 8-1. I'm going to push it all the way out to 14-1 for BJ, Joseph to win that race tomorrow.
Fair play. Thanks so much, Leon. BJ, I'll leave it over to you. I know you know more about scrummaging than horse racing, so I'd be interested to hear what you go with.
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, I reckon I'm going to go for the base odds there, and I think I'm going to come in at thundering knots at 14-1.
Brilliant.
BJ. Yeah, and what we do, Dunners, I think, listen, we can have a 100 win, and if it doesn't work out, we'll also honour a €50 each way bet. So please God, it gets its nose in front to win, which would be a fantastic return, 1,500 quid for Epilepsy Ireland.